Hello, this is Tech Unfiltered, and I'm your host, Irvi Banerjee. So, just a little bit about me. I am a high school student, and I'm a high school student in Champaign Central. So, many of you may not know much about me, but I love technology. I've always loved doing technology, and it's always been one of my biggest passions ever since I was a kid. I thought I was going to do a lot of things, but technology has been the one that has mostly stuck with me. But more about what Tech Unfiltered is going to be. This is the very first episode, so I really want to keep this simple. This show is about technology, the good, the bad, and the stuff we don't slow down enough to really think about. So I'm not going to be talking about, like, the hype of technology or the panic or just everybody freaking out, but what type of technology really actually affects people. So let's jump right into it. Tech Unfiltered was kind of a show that I wanted to start was because we look at technology in such a scary way. For example, some people think that technology is going to ruin the world and AI is going to kill you and so many other things. But there's so much depth into it that we need to understand, that we need to look into. So that's really the point of this show. And technology is moving so fast that people aren't really comfortable with it. For example, like, so many people are afraid to, like, lose their jobs. So that's why a lot of people are, like, freaking out. And companies are moving faster than we want to. Investors are moving faster. And people, honestly, are realistically not adapting, like, as fast as we want to. So let's think about how our daily routines has changed in the last few years. How much of your day now involves screens, notifications, algorithms making choices for you, recommendations telling you what to watch, what to buy, what to read, who to follow, and sometimes even what to believe. None of that happened by accident. Technology used to feel optional. Now it feels kind of mandatory. And if you don't knowledge yourself with all of this, you may feel like you're behind. And that creates pressure. Pressure to upgrade, pressure to learn new tools, pressure to stay relevant, pressure to respond instantly. But the pressure is one of the most underrated sides of modern technology. We rarely ask whether technology is making life calmer or more stressful. We just assume faster is better. Sometimes, you know, some people think it's really bad, some people think it's really good. But is it? Let's take smartphones as an example. These devices are incredible. The fact that you can reach the whole world by just your fingertips. They connect us, entertain us, inform us, help us work, navigate, shop, and communicate. But they also fragment attention, blur work-life boundaries, and even make silence uncomfortable. You're never fully offline anymore. Even when you're resting, your phone is quietly pulling you back in. That's not an accident. That's actually how people designed it. A lot of modern technology isn't just built to function. It's built to hold your attention. And attention is one of the most valuable resources in the digital economy. If a product is free, your attention is usually the product. Now, I want to be clear. This isn't a, oh, phones are really bad rant. This is about awareness. Technology shapes behavior, and if we don't understand how it's shaping us, we lose reality. That brings me to the first real topic I want to dig into, the invisible trade-offs of convenience or of technology. We love convenience. In fact, you can see that if anybody has seen the Black Friday, there's barely anybody in Black Friday anymore. Like, everybody's doing Cyber Monday. And you look at it and be like, oh, so people are more likely to just sit at home and click what they want to order instead of going to Black Friday and going to these stores that are jam-packed. So we love convenience and we love the auto pay. We love the smart assistants. We love these things, but convenience always comes with a cost. When something becomes easier, something else becomes less visible. Take, for example, navigation apps. They're amazing, but most of us no longer learn how to do geography like we used to. We follow instructions instead of understanding where we're actually going. It's not bad, but it's definitely a shift in, for example, like, my dad always used to tell me that when he used to go on trips, he would have this huge map in front of him and he would have to figure out where he has to go. And, you know, that's such a difference in what we're doing today, where someone kind of just tells us where we're going and Google Maps or whatever you use tells us where we're going. Let's take a left or take a right while we're not looking at a big, huge map. And for examples, even more like streaming services, like social platforms decide what content we see. Search engines decide which answers appear first. Little by little, we outsource our judgment. And again, that's not evil, but it's powerful. And power deserves some comeback to it too. Now let's put artificial intelligence on top of this. AI didn't arrive with a warning label. It just showed up inside of people's tools, and people were already using writing assistants, image generators, recommendation systems, customer service bots, hiring software. People were already using this. And I know a lot of people are saying like, oh, I didn't use AI, I don't want to use AI. But the reality is, like, the minute you turn on your phone, you're using AI. And AI is already shaping so many things, like who gets interviews, what content gets amplified, which ads you see, how information is filtered, and most of the time you don't even know it's happening. That raises an important question. How much decision making are we comfortable handing over to systems we don't fully understand? Because here's the thing, complexity doesn't remove responsibility. The developer, the company, the data, the user, those all are still accountable. So who is responsible? These questions matter, especially as these systems become more embedded in everyday life. And this isn't some far off future problem that's going to happen and then it's not really relevant right now. The reality is it is. It is relevant right now and it's happening right now. Right now, companies are racing to deploy AI because the competitive pressure is enormous. Imagine looking at one company, seeing that they can do the same thing another company does in a few seconds, while other companies takes weeks. Nobody wants to be the one who falls behind, but speed comes at the expense of reflection. We don't pause long enough to ask, should this exist? Or at least, should it exist this way? Now, let's just bring this back down to earth. Think about your job, your school, or your creative work. Chances are, technology has already changed how you do it. Maybe it's made things easier. Maybe it's made things faster. And maybe it's made the expectations higher. A task that used to take a day now takes an hour. So now you're expected to do more in the same amount of time. Productivity gains doesn't always translate to less work. Sometimes they translate to more pressure. And that's another hidden trade-off. Technology promises efficiency, but rarely promises rest. And culturally, we've bought into the idea that if something can be optimized, it should be. Even when optimization strips away the breathing room that so many people have today. This is why burnout is so common in a hyper-connected world. There's no natural stopping point anymore. Work bleeds into home. Messages follow you everywhere. Downtime feels guilty. Again, not because technology is evil, but because it's powerful. And power without boundaries reshapes behavior. Now, I want to pivot to something else slightly, but technology is also doing genuinely incredible things. It's helping doctors detect disease earlier. It's improving weather forecasting. It's expanding access to education. It's connecting people across distance. And it's even helping people with so many disabilities. And we can't look back on, like, we can't, like, look past this because it's helped so many people. It's like doctors have historically been able to detect diseases a lot faster than it ever has been. So the question isn't whether technology is good or bad, but how are we being intentional with it? How are we using it? Are we designing systems that serve people or people who serve systems? And that's the tension we're going to keep coming back on. Technology reflects priorities. And right now, many tech priorities are driven by speed, scale, and profit. Those aren't wrong, but they're incomplete. It doesn't look at the full story. Human well-being doesn't always scale neatly. And when it gets ignored, the cost shows up later. In mental health, in inequality, in trust, in social cohesion. This is why conversations about technology can't just be technical. They have to be social, ethical, and human. At the end of the day, these machines are being used by humans. So as we move forward, we need to look at how do these technologies impact us? For example, like, it has been historically seen that a lot of people are a lot more antisocial than they used to be. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to be antisocial. But a lot of people are finding comfort in their screens, comfort in these shorts and TikToks and all of that. And that's great. You know, finding comfort is one of the most essential things that humans want to do. Humans always want to find comfort. And it's one of the hardest things to get out of that comfort, to stop, you know, just stop being comfortable. For example, like, you don't want to get out of your comfort zone. It's not fun. It never will be. But you know, staying in that comfort for too long is also bad. For example, that if you scroll for hours and hours and hours, you're not going to be, well, you might be happy, but you're going to feel like you've done nothing in the day. And that's why we need to get out of our comfort zone. And that's why technology has been such a big issue, is because how is it affecting teens? How is it affecting us? Because we're always like, we can get entertainment in just 2 seconds, but is that bad? Is it good? Should it be happening? Should it not be happening? It's definitely something that we really need to be thinking about. Because AI and technology, it's not just affecting people's jobs, and which is very important, people's jobs, companies, but it's also affecting the new generation. The new generation is coming to a point where we have, well, at least in, like, Gen Z, has been living with technology ever since they were born. And that's a big thing. So we're very well versed, but where's the limit? Where do we say that this is bad? Where do we say that this can't be happening? And that's a question that a lot of people have a lot of debate on. Like, for example, MIT has having a lot of debates about whether technology is something that should be, like, for example, even in my own school, they're having debates of whether technology should be used in the classroom. Because, for example, if you were doing a really, really hard math problem and at home for homework, and you come in and you don't do it because it was just so hard that you couldn't figure it out, and you come back to school and everybody else has done their homework, but you haven't, and because you couldn't understand, while other students are using artificial intelligence to help them, like, figure out the problem, the fact is you're behind. And that's just the question that's really coming into perspective, is how is this going to work, and how is this going to be affect people? So as we move forward on Tech Unfiltered, that's the lens we're going to use. We're not going to look at the bad. We're not going to look at all the good, but not the hype nor the perspective. So we're going to be very concrete. We're going to talk about the real tech news happening. and actual developments that are happening in real time and break down what they mean beyond the headlines. So that is what we're going to do. And we are listening on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org. If anybody wants to hear on the website, you can do that too. So we're going to be coming back and we're just going to do a short music break. And then we're going to go on to the next topic. Have a great day. Hello, welcome back to Tech Unfiltered. And before we get into it, here's a quick PSA. Friday afternoon on WEFT brings the voices, tones, and rhythms of many lands, blended, smooth, and served. Perfectly chilled on a show called Senior Blues. Every Friday from 2 to 4 p.m., your host, Craig Kosolfsky, shares his passion for international music, new and classic, acoustic and electrical, traditional and experimental, and Craig says it's been a privilege and a pleasure to broadcast international sounds to East Central Illinois with Senior Blues since 1999. That is great. So you are listening on WEFT Champaign, and you can stream online at weft.org. Now, welcome back. This is the part of the show where we kind of like zoom in on actual tech news happening right now. What's real in January 2026, which is absolutely crazy, and what it means for everyday life. Let's start with something that's already reshaping how we interact with our devices. Voice-first AI interfaces that seem human, which that sounds scary the first time you think of it. But a major tech analysis just dropped explaining how gadgets are finally learning to communicate in ways that feel more natural than typing ever did. Devices aren't just responding to commands anymore, they're engaging in conversations. Companies like Google, OpenAI, and Amazon, and others have made breakthroughs and let digital assistants understand context, speech nuances, and even tone in real time. This isn't the old say the exact phrase to get the exact response type of system. Users are now having conversations with their devices that sound like normal human dialogue. This was on Wall Street Journal. And this is actually absolutely crazy. The fact that you can now teach an artificial intelligence to talk like a human, to have this like the specific speech of a human. Because the speaking of humans in general, doesn't matter what language, it's so nuanced, and there's so many rules, and you don't really even know what's like. You personally, people who speak, they don't understand. They just speak, but it's so hard to teach someone, like especially like a machine, to speak like humans do, which is it's such a crazy advancement in technology, and it's neither good nor bad, but we'll see how it is. But what does that mean for you? First, convenience. People are already dictating emails while walking, getting summaries spoken back while driving, and interacting without ever touching a screen. Like, for example, I opened up my Gmail app, and then I saw a button that said, summarize this email. And I was like, wow, like, I didn't even know that you could do that. But then it just like, I can just summarize this email in one sentence, it will tell me exactly what it's all saying. Or I can like tell AI to basically say what I want to say on the email, and I don't even have to think twice about like, let's say like greetings or commas or punctuation or anything. But we have to be honest about like the potential downsides of this. When interfaces become too easy, there's a risk of what behavioral scientists call cognitive offloading, meaning we start relying on tools for memory and thinking in ways that change how we learn and retain information. And experts worry this could soften skills like recall, problem solving over time if we lean on it too much. So this cognitive offloading that psychologists are constantly talking about that's related to technology is definitely something that we really need to talk about, because cognitive offloading is is it could be dangerous, but it could also be, it's also what we always do. Like, we always try to find something new to do. For example, like, as a kid, like, if I got bored at a party, we would empty water bottles. We would make, like, some type of game. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, cognitive offloading could, like, benefit, but there's also disadvantages. For example, getting too much information, getting too much entertainment, and using artificial intelligence too much. Now, let's shift and let's talk about the hardware, because some of the most exciting and potentially disruptive news isn't just in software like Gmail, Google, OpenAI, but in the devices themselves. OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT architecture many of you may use every day, has now publicly confirmed it's building a consumer AI device, with a launch expected in the back half, the end of the six months of 2026. This product is reportedly being developed alongside Jony Ive, the designer who helped shape iconic Apple devices that everybody loves. And that really, like, tells you something right there. Like, tech companies now believe AI hardware needs beautiful design and real usability, and not just, like, just it being on your phone. Now, there's not that much details on this, obviously, because artificial intelligence is, like, this hardware isn't obviously seen right now, but we can see a lot into it. For example, like, we can see how can this be affected in everyday life and a lot more. So, but speculation points to something wearable, like an AI wearable device or an ultra compact with a focus on, like, seamless interaction with the artificial intelligence. Whether it ends up being, like, earbuds or, like, pins or headphones, it's something entirely new. It's an entirely new thing that will enter the market. And this device could make a turning point that is just, like, so, it might be catastrophic, it might be good, like, we don't know. And hardware has also been slower to adopt AI at a consumer level compared to models on phones and computers, because obviously, like, getting something on hardware is so much harder than getting something on software. And if OpenAI nails, like, this usability, this could shift how we access AI, not just what we do with it. But these developments aren't just limited to one company. I know a lot of people are talking about OpenAI and what they can do and all that. But the world's largest PC maker, Lenovo, is actually partnering with multiple AI model developers, including firms from multiple regions like Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, to embed AI across its product lineup. Rather than rely on a single AI provider, they're aiming for a multi-AI ecosystem, which means different AI capabilities optimized for different tasks on laptops, phones, and wearables. It's a big thing, because a lot of companies have actually only used one AI, but having a multiple AI ecosystem is a lot different than other companies have ever done. So it's really a big move in the market, and we're definitely going to look into it and see, like, what is the effect and how is this going to play into our lives. But there's also a broader move in the industry toward AI collaboration instead of dominance, which might help avoid the single central AI system that detects all behaviors. But it also raises questions about standards, data privacy, and compatibility. Because if every company's AI behaves differently, users might struggle to keep up with the inconsistent experiences. For example, if I went to one app and the AI, like, was like, was coded in a really weird way, and then we went to another AI, and that was coded in a really weird way. Like, the market would obviously, people would become more comfortable with the AI they want to be comfortable with, and it might just completely ruin the market. And so this is something that companies are really looking into and seeing if a multiple AI ecosystem will enhance the consumer experience or will it decrease it. And speaking of AI interacting with the physical world and people, robotics and physical AI are into a new phase. Traditional robots followed specific repetitive instructions. For example, go forward, go left, anything like that. And think like factory lines. So for example, the polishing the same object over and over. Today's robots are actually learning through imitation, trial and error, also stimulation, making them far more flexible and capable in unstructured environments like farms, hospitals, warehouses, and even customer service. And this shift means that robots aren't going to just replace the same old tasks. They'll be able to work alongside humans in unpredictable settings. For example, like when picking fruit and figuring out which one is good and which one is bad, navigating complex hospital corridors, or assisting workers in tasks that require adaptation. But with these advances come real challenges, like data scarcity for training, safety concerns when robots misinterpret their environments, and the need for continuous learning without forgetting critical skills. For example, like, what if the robot forgets how to do this? Or what if they say that this is one thing, like, this is this is a good fruit, but it's actually, like, a horrible fruit, and it's poisonous, and it hurts somebody. There could be catastrophic things that happen if these machines misinterpret their environments. And this is also been using in labs, like autonomous systems and AI robotics are already rolling out in logistics, agriculture, and healthcare. The flip side is the question that always people ask: what happens to jobs when intelligent machines don't need scripted instructions anymore? If robots can flexibly handle tasks that used to require years of training, some roles might evolve while others disappear. And that's a real conversation people need to have now in seeing how will this affect the job market in a few years. And one of the biggest things that a lot of people think about is how is this going to affect me? And looking into what this article is saying is that it's not going to replace anybody, but it might just expect more of the people who are working there, which is a lot. Like, expecting someone to work more, like do more things, is a lot for a company to ask for. But There's always an uncertainty to this, because we don't really actually know what's going to happen with this artificial intelligence. And it's something that a lot of people are scared about, because what if we like lose our jobs and stuff? And what if I can't be good enough for the company? And the reality is that these are real questions, and also like nobody really knows at this point. So looking at what's going to happen, like, I'm very interested of what's going to happen and how this is going to change the job market. Is it going to give more jobs, or is it going to take jobs? Or it's really something interesting, and it's really something not many people have a lot of information about right now. But as we go on to just see what other tech news is going to be happening right now, one of the biggest tech events of the year, CES 2026, just wrapped up, and the takeaways tell us that where consumer tech might head next, from AI companies in 3D holographic forms to smart home robots attempting household chores. This show was honestly amazing, and it really showed updates in what the technology is going to do, and it was reimagining everyday interactions. For example, washing your dishes or cleaning the floor. And one standout is a holographic AI companion that can handle scheduling, translation, and even motivational support. Essentially a floating digital assistant. This device blends AI, spatial computing, and 3D holography to try to create physical presence for digital intelligence. Whether this trend catches on broadly, we don't know, but it's something what these people are trying to feel is natural instead of just like a thing that only really, really rich people can get. But it's definitely a significant step in the experimental tech that is going on today. And going into more, there's even an AI pet that grows and changes physically as you interact with it. But its lifespan depends on your care, like any other pet. But this raises fascinating questions about emotional attachment and digital responsibility. Will people treat AI companions as toys or tools or something closer to living entities? Or is the social and psychological implications and how it affects people, are we really willing to mess with that? Because it's really like, we don't want someone to get attached to this AI pet, and it's really scary. But it's also like, this could, for other people, this could change their lives. It could help them finally understand how to take care of something. Like, this could be really big for some other people, and other people, they could just get really emotionally attached to it, and it could harm them. So that's what, like, looking at both sides, like, that's what we're looking into. And going into more, hardware breakthroughs aside, AI is also influencing regulatory and data protection conversations globally. Government agencies, especially in the UK and Europe, are assessing what they call agentic AI. These are systems that act on their own behalf, not just respond to prompts. And the implications that this has for data protection. As AI gains autonomy, existing privacy laws struggle to keep up, especially when an AI system might act in ways not directly specified by a user. So this is, like, really big, because the fact that, like, governments are using this, and it's really showing how much that it's growing. Like, how much, if governments are realizing that this is a very efficient thing, and it can actually, well, it actually says that systems that act on their behalf and not just respond to prompts, like, these systems are going to be acting on their behalf. Like, government agencies are seeing what systems could act on their behalf. That is crazy. Like, especially because we don't know what the systems are going to do. What if they make a mistake? There are so many what ifs to this, but there's not that much information right now. But it's really something that makes this question that AI is no longer like something that's going to change our future. It's actually going to change our now. And it's woven into the fabric of current consumer and enterprise tech. It's woven into absolutely everything. And understanding that, what are the latest news, what can we do about it, what, like, looking at both sides will really, really help us and make sure to see what will benefit us, what are we going to do, so many more things to it. And before we go off into a music break, I'm going to just do a quick PSA of Kill February 15th on 2026. Development Service Center is close to reaching its 300,000 goal for the annual Tree of Hope campaign. Tree of Hope is DSC's largest fundraiser of the year, and the money raised directly supports essential programs and services for children and adults with development disabilities. For more information, go to dsc-illinois.org. I'll be seeing you after this quick music break. I hope you have a great day, and you're listening to Tech Unfiltered on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org. Hello, welcome back. And wrapping things up, because I there's a lot that we've talked about, especially about the news and so many other things. Now we need to look into like the what we're doing right now. We've talked about what's new, what's rolling out, what's changing fast. Now, what is the most important question of all? What does this actually mean for people? Not companies, not investors, not futurists on stage with buzzwords that always try to make consumers buy something, but people. Because technology only matters if it changes how we live, work, think, and connect. So let's start with work, because there's where most people feel tech change first. For decades, technology promised to make work easier, faster, more efficient, and in many ways it did, but what it didn't do was reduce expectations. Instead, it raised them. Emails used to wait until morning, now they follow you everywhere. And projects that used to take weeks now take days. Like I said before, this is something where a lot of people have pressure to keep up. Now, AI is accelerating this pressure, because once a tool exists that can do part of your job faster, that speed becomes the new baseline. And this doesn't mean everyone is getting replaced tomorrow, but it does mean that job security looks different. And job security, one of the biggest things right now, stability is being replaced with flexibility. Careers are becoming modular instead of linear. That's exciting for some people, but terrifying for others. And both reactions are valid. For example, in art, I'm an artist myself. I love doing art. I think it can be very soothing at times, but it's also like I get so mad sometimes because I can't get it right, or it's just this small detail. I love doing art. Like, I went to the Chicago Art Museum and I went to the art tour and I loved it. It was definitely a memory I will always have. So now let's talk about how technology is working in art, because a lot of artists are talking about how are we going to, like, how is it going to affect artists in general? And that's a very valid question, because these art that AI is making is not what humans are. It's not showing any human emotion. It's not showing any human, like, it's not showing human. And that's really back to, it's really changing how people live, how people work. Like, if you see a painting as you're walking by at this office, is that AI or is that a real person? My opinion as an artist may be biased, but my opinion on this is that art was meant for humans. Art, music, connecting, this was all meant for humans. This is about expressing humans. And I think it's really essential that we continue to do that, because I don't believe that AI, no matter what anybody says, AI is never, ever, ever going to replace humans. Humans are such unpredictable creatures. Well, yeah, creatures and mammals, but they are unpredictable. And in that unpredictable, that means no machine can be like us. So a machine trying to do art, it might get really close. You might think, yeah, a person did that. But it's never actually ever going to be it. It's never going to show the human emotion that other people can show. And it's something that we really need to understand, because that's changing people's lives. It's changing people's work, and it's changing what people are going to do for the rest of their lives. And AI doesn't create meaning on its own. AI is a pattern-based system. Humans still decide what matters and what resonates or what feels real. But here's the shift. The originality is no longer just about, like, producing it. It's about the perspective anyone can generate art or content now, but fewer people can generate insight. So this creativity doesn't disappear, it evolves. The value moves from who can make this to who can frame this, guide this, and give it purpose. Who can make art that really makes it purposeful and really makes it like people could feel? So it's uncomfortable because I don't think many people expected this. And every major tech shift does this. Like, photography didn't kill art. Recording didn't kill music. Digital tools didn't kill design. They changed the rules. So looking at it from that perspective, it's just going to change the rules, not only in art, music, recording, but in jobs and in people. Yeah, but people, you have to admit that there's so many good things happening out there. And like what I said previously, like, there's so many new advancements and people are doing amazing things, and people and AI and machines are changing lives, while also there's another thing to it. It's sometimes ruining people's lives. It's taking away people's passions and people's love for something because they need to do more. So definitely looking into that and seeing that this is necessarily not what anybody really wanted. But we get to decide what kind of future feels worth building. And that conversation doesn't only belong with corporations or artificial intelligence or machines or anything. It belongs to all of us. So this has been Tech Unfiltered. And I'm glad you're here at the first episode. You are streaming on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org. I hope you have an amazing day.